Josiah Royce was born in 1855 in Grass Valley, California. He became a leader in American idealism and first used the term beloved community. Josiah believed reality as a universe of ideas or signs which occur in a process of being interpreted by an infinite community of minds. Did you get that? A reality as a universe of ideas or signs which occur in a process of being interpreted by an infinite community of minds. So a larger consciousness. His basis for community was loyalty. One basis for loyalty was our community of memory. That community which acknowledges and accepts each of our individual and communal past events and acts. The other was a community of hope. That community which acknowledges and accepts each of our individual and communal possible future events and acts. By having this common understanding of our past and our possible future, we build a loyalty to those within our community. With me so far? Okay. And we see this in our congregation, right? We acknowledge our past. We have a possible future view for ourselves, and that brings us together. We see this in our faith of Unitarian Universalism, in our cities, in our states, and maybe in our countries. Now, within those loyalties, Josiah also recognized types of possible communities. A community based on an adherence to a cause that harmonizes with the greater good was called a community of grace. Whereas a community based on the adherence to a cause which destroys another's cause or loyalty was called a community of destruction. However, each of these were limited in being able to encompass the whole of humanity and creation. Therefore, Josiah coined the term beloved community. He envisioned this community as one which has an adherence to realizing authentic community for the purpose of the flourishing of all creation. Not just humans, all creation. Josiah stressed this was not a sentimental notion of community. Instead, it was one to strive to create. It required a total relatedness to all of creation that relied on courage, empathic presence, and perseverance. He insisted it was a spiritual practice in loyalty, and the loyalty was to the understanding that love is a more powerful force for change than fear. Can we say amen to that?
Amen.
And that it be grounded not in disappointment, but in possibility. To quote Josiah Royce, "When one cannot find beloved community, she needs to take steps to create it. And if there is no evidence of such a community, then the rule to live by is to act so as to hasten its coming." This term, beloved community, gained momentum and was picked up by his contemporary at the time, universalist social ethicist and theologian, Clarence Skinner. Skinner, in his book, Worship and the Well-Ordered Life, defined the term as follows. Beloved community is not an organization of individuals seeking private and selfish security for their souls, just so you know. It is a new adventure, a spontaneous fellowship of consecrated men and women seeking a new world. It is the comradeship of those who forget themselves in their passion to find the common life where the good of all is the quest of each. He further states the purpose to be to reverse the consequences of lovelessness and injustice in the souls and behaviors of its members so that we can work together more effectively for a just social and economic order. That was written in the late 1800s, early 1900s, but I think it's very relevant still today. We heard in our words of wisdom how Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. used the term beloved community as a goal to strive towards in our relationships with each other and the world around us. Poverty, homelessness, racial injustice, discrimination, and violent conflict do not have a place in beloved community. There continue to be strains of the concept of beloved community in our contemporary Unitarian Universalist history. Reverend James Luther Adams reminds us, church is where we practice becoming more human, and the ground of our being together is covenant. And our covenant is to strive towards beloved community. Reverend Mark Morrison Reed states, the central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all, and once these bonds are felt, to be inspired to act for justice. Reverend Dr. Tantayaka insists we are called to love beyond our belief and to be active participants in a new creation. And finally, from Reverend Tom Owen O'Toole, beloved community keeps evolving. The church is a transforming and being transformed, a change agent, and the beneficiary of change. We know that more is possible, more meaning, more purpose, more love. We are on a journey toward wholeness, which we understand as salvation in this life. What each one of these thinkers on this topic understands about beloved community is that this is not some lofty goal that we cannot achieve. It is something we can create now, in this place, at this time, in our world. And these walls, this community, is the experimental playground of beloved community. It's the environment for us to practice creating beloved community, which we then take out into the greater world. In order for us to be truly co-creators in beloved community, it requires us to have a paradigm shift and to think in a new way, especially in how we do justice making. So let's look at some current dominant justice paradigms and compare it to the beloved community paradigm. And I've got photos. So our dominant justice making paradigm limits itself to political views and realities. We're narrow. We get separated into Democrats and Republicans. We see the world as bipartisan, and the common good is hard to achieve. You recognize that? The beloved roots itself in religious and spiritual view that recognizes political realities, because they're there, right? We are living out the seven principles whether or not our world is in peace or in chaos. We are striving to create community which flourishes and see we have worked together, build common ground to achieve it. The political realities need to be taken into consideration in how we build that common ground. In other words, we try to sit down and talk to each other instead of just saying us and them, which leads me to the next one. Our dominant paradigm separates us into us and them. Very prevalent in today's society. Our beloved says there's only us. There's no us and them. It's all of us. It's whoever exists on this planet at this time. There are no borders. There are no divides. We're all in this together. The dominant puts things at the center. Our tasks, our plans, our analysis, our resources, and I would even say our comfort and our satisfaction. One of the ways to think about that when we put things at the center is when we think about the stories that we hear of people's experiences. Especially for those of us that are very in our minds, that we like our facts, that we like our proven theories, that when we hear a person's experience, we have to find out the facts before we can validate that experience. Whereas in beloved, we put the relationship first. It's not that we dismiss the facts or anything like that, but we also look into the person's eyes. We validate their experience. We validate who they are, because you don't know. You haven't been in their shoes. You haven't walked their path. You can only know a smidgen of what another person's life has been like, even if you have been with that person for 50 years. Right? So not putting things at the center, but putting relationship at the center. The dominant sees issues as things that need to be fixed. And usually when you have something that you have to fix, it's a short-term idea, right? You don't think about the long-term consequences. You don't think about let's get it fixed now, right? Beloved says, all right, we've got an issue. Doesn't mean we have to be in chaos, but what can we learn from this and be transformed? Okay? What can we learn from this and be transformed? Dominant says your identity is based on your status and role. I'm a white woman in her 40s that's a minister and a mother. That's who I am. Beloved says we are way more than that. And we are not only defined by our identity. We are defined by our experiences. We are defined by our relationships. We are defined by our actions. We're not just defined by our identities. The dominant, you can see this right now, right? The dominant is reactive and fearful. It responds to fear. Whereas the beloved is based in that possibility, right? Based in that place of hope, of being proactive. What can we build? What can we do? The highway is going to get expanded at some point during the next few years. Who knows what it'll be? Who cares? What can we do now? Right? We can still build. We can still dream. We don't have to be reliant on that freeway or highway. Sorry, I got a little too ahead of myself there. And we can do that with our issues and the other things in our life. Being dominant, it engages for other people. So I like this sign because it kind of, men equality respects women's equality. That's kind of saying, okay, men are going to stand up because women need them to stand up. It does not recognize that in beloved community, the men are just as important to be able to stand up for those issues because it affects them just as much as it does the women. Right? We stand up because it's our own salvation to stand up for everyone. We will all be able to live in an equitable, free society when we all stand up and realize that it affects us just as much as anybody else when we say that we're going to engage. Feel a little passionate about that. Yeah. The dominant, I'm going to change that out there. And I'm going to do it when I have time. Right? The beloved, Gandhi's quote, be the change you want to see in the world. Again, all of this is tied to who we are, no matter we're being oppressed or the oppressors. We need to be the change in the world that we want to see. If we want to see something change, we need to be the co-creators of that change. Let me stress, neither of these are right or wrong. They're just different ways of engaging justice. Both work towards justice and use different methods of achieving their goals. However, only one harnesses the power of love to enact change. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, justice is love correcting that which revolts against love. Love is the readiness to go to any length to restore community. So if our congregational covenant starts with the phrase, "We enter beloved community intentionally," and we know now beloved community can be realized here and now, it is based in relationship within and outside these walls. It is fueled by love, and it is calling us to be co-creators. Then what does it call us to do as a congregation? What expectations do the words "we enter beloved community intentionally" set up for us to fulfill? What are we called to do? How do we need to change? What do we need to shift? What comes to mind for you as possibilities in how to engage this church and the larger communities? What are your thoughts? What are we called to do as a congregation? If our words start with "we enter into beloved community intentionally," what are we called to do? What expectations? Because this isn't just my work. It's all of our work. And if this is the experimental playground, what do we got to play with?
In this community, a woman cannot get an abortion legally. You have to go far away. And you know, it's hard enough, I'm sure, but it seems to me that's pretty wrong. We have something to work on.
Okay. So looking at those rights, knowing it affects all of us.
To listen to each other without judging.
It seems like it's really easy to talk about social justice, but as an individual, to face somebody and say, that's not the right thing to say. And, you know, for me personally, it's something I'm working on, being more and more brave and not just seething about it inside, but to say, you know, that's racist, that's homophobic, that's demeaning to women. We just have to say it and call people on it.
We can practice that at our walls because we're not perfect.
Right.
I don't think about what we do. I mean, if it's about the relationship, then you know, whatever we're talking about, it's who are we talking with, you know, and how are we talking to them, whether it's, you know, whether it's a social justice issue or whether it's an environmental issue or whatever. I mean, if this is about being beloved, then how do we love the people that we're talking to?
Anyone else?
So still trying to define what this means to me. And the journey I started in February this year, where it's led me to is I choose to do more than just love my community. I choose to give my own time to my community. So I volunteer 4 hours on Saturday every morning. And I'm looking for more opportunities to help my community.
To try and see things from other people's perspectives as much as possible, and rather than trying to guess what those perspectives are, to ask.
To stand up and be counted.
We have some midterm elections coming up locally and nationally, and that too can be a voice of our beloved community as to what we believe, who do we want making decisions for us, from the Supreme Court to our local community.
So should we hold each other accountable the Tuesday after election, or the Sunday after election day, to say, okay, who voted? Because beloved community isn't about just putting those expectations out there, it's about holding each other accountable to it, right?
For me, beloved community, and what I can help out with is just what Gandhi said, to be the change, and doing my work, so that I can just be that role model, and also know, be confident within myself that I can stand up and say, that's racist, and that's not tolerable in this society, in this community, in this beloved community. So I am working, it's a lifelong goal for me, but I wanna be able to role model my values, which are congruent with UU values, as often as I can. Believe me, I fail often, but I'm working on it.
Okay,
Mariah,
after Luke, and then
we'll be done. One of the things I have to work on is, instead of just being a Sunday friend, being a friend to everybody, every day of the week, and stuff that, I guess, my mask of being a part-time person.
I think one thing that I can do and that I would challenge all of us to do is just to slow down and see people.
Okay. And I would add, beloved community calls us, expects us, and creates possibilities for us to engage in relationship with each other, to journey with each other through loss, pain, joy, and celebration. Acknowledging we all have something in common, that is the human experience of life and death, as well as everything in between. We do that pretty well here. But do we do that when we walk out the door in our community, standing in the grocery line when we're impatient, driving along the road, at our work, at our doctor's office? It encourages ourselves and each other in the search for truth and meaning in our lives and about our lives, which we're really good about. We're really good about searching for our own truth and meaning, and recognizing we each have that. But often we forget we have known truth just in the experiences of our lives. And we are called to hear those lived experiences even if they do not validate our own. So we're good about recognizing we each have our truth and meaning. We also have to validate everyone else's truth and meaning. It calls us to recognize we're each a part of humanity and bring a unique gift to the world. We are here for a reason, and we have a purpose to fulfill it. It allows for the full expression of feelings for ourselves and others. We are here for the full human experience, which means not only witnessing joy and happiness, but also depression, sadness, confusion, anger, and loneliness. In witnessing of these emotions, we acknowledge the gift we have been given to the person to trust us with those emotions. And that's where we have to be very careful not to fix. It's about the journey. It's not about the fixing. Because your presence, when a person is in that place of depression, sadness, loneliness, and even anger, which can be scary just to witness, is just as powerful and even more powerful than trying to fix what's wrong. Because absolutely nothing is wrong. They're just feeling. It calls us to acknowledge we are imperfect beings, each of us trying to do our best in the world at any given moment. We are whole and broken at the same time, whole in our life experience and broken from the effects of that experience. And it calls us to work through disappointment, conflict, and confusion when we break covenant, because we know there are opportunities of transformation within that work we do together. We have the ability to fulfill these callings, expectations, and possibilities by living fully into our congregational covenant we have created together. We will use it as a reminder to call us back into ourselves, back into relationship, back into beloved community. May we embody this understanding and make it real in our world. Amen.